But it's a chazal, one of Makaris is a chazal that says that the Abaskal comes out, Motzi and Kippah, and says, Lecha chol b'simcha lachmecha, kikorotza l'kimes ma'secha. I wanted to just say a knetch. Once HaKadosh Baruch Hu put a teva into the Bria, that Nahama de Kisufa, that without Zeyas Apayim, there's no Lechem. A person doesn't enjoy things that he didn't work for. That doesn't feel he earned. It's one of our problems most times that we're meant to eat, both physically and mitzvah mitzvah and so on, we don't feel that we earned it. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a yontif. We didn't do all that much to earn it. And, you know, it doesn't, and b'meila there's no simcha in it, because like all Nahama de Kisufa, like all things that we get unearned, we lack a lot of simcha. Yom Kippur, once there's a rotzel l'kim asecha, there's a sense that we put a lot in, we invested a lot of ourselves and sweated it and so on, there's a sense of accomplishment, and that's why there's a simcha nachilas lechem, because since the maisim, we have a sense that the l'rotzen, there's a simcha in it also. I want to speak in general. I guess one of the frustrations in a yeshiva setting is many elements of Yiddishkeit are given over. Learning, Baruch Hashem, you know, with all the things that need to be metuken, but eich shelo yeh, learning, there's real learning going on, and people get from it, and they grow from it, and so on. There's yira, in the sense, between the shmuzen, between a day like in Kippur, just as mitshuva, eich shelo yeh, that also falls into place. Simcha kemat doesn't have a place to fall into place. It's not only the yeshiva's a problem, in the dor. It's possible for a person to evoke yira. A person speaks strongly, he tells over tear-jerking stories, he talks about the Gehenna, whatever it is, a good speaker evokes some form of yira. And we have that, and people relate to that. There are plenty of Shabbos, of Aseres Meitshuva drushes and things like that that are to some degree effective in bringing in Yira. To bring in Simcha, we sort of, certainly in the Litvish world, certainly in the non-Chassidish world, we sort of are at a loss. And it's just like any tripod where you have a leg broken is not going to stand. The Kuzari says Yiddishkeit builds itself on three emotions, an ave, an yira, and an simcha. And if simcha is not there, a tripod can't stand on two feet. It's unbalanced and doesn't go anyplace. If Yiddishkeit is meant to stand on simcha, then, and we don't have it, our kids don't see us enjoying ruchnius. They see us committed to ruchnius. They see us, if we're good at it, they see us getting up and davening on time, they see us going to a seder, even though we're tired and so on. That, by Ben Ali, is there. But the sense of just being happy with it, that I'm so happy. I don't remember if I told or didn't tell to make some mix, it comes to mind. I was reading a more modern writer of sorts. I mean, he wrote it in somewhere in the end of the 1800s, but probably early 1900s. He wrote a description of Breslov. And the story is not, you know, it wasn't a hagiography. It was quite with an interesting perspective on it. And that's why I say the person was not a chassid for sure, and possibly a more modern person. And he describes, he opens up, Breslov chassidim were always extremely impoverished, extremely. They were the poorest of the poor. They were the nebs of the nebs. They were always kind of the mamish, the outcasts. And he describes a shtetl, I don't remember which one, but had a lot of different chassidus. And each one he describes its unique milas, the type of Zmir is here, the type of this, type of that. Everything had its own yichud. And then he describes, he says, at the very end of the village, the most dilapidated house, the one that's barely, that's standing up al pines, there's a group of Breslau Chassidim there, describes how, by East European standards, the kids were bedraggled and they really, really, and he's sitting there and he said, and the singing, and he said that somebody was saying over Torah from the Rebbe. And he was saying about a shtickl on Bahanchel Elyon Goyim that about the spashtos of Torah to Mesoilam, whatever it is, and so on and so forth. And there were two maskilim sitting there. And one snickered to the other. The only thing they're missing is to become global. They have everything already settled, and you know, Baruch Hashem, it's very established here, and like the global part of it is what's missing. Like that was the snicker. And then he describes how the evening wore on and the simcha with which people exuded in the dancing, the singing, and then at the end of it, one kid says to the other, if only everybody would know about this simcha, it would be so good, wouldn't it? And one in Maskilim nods and says, yes, it would be so good. The sense of having the simcha means the simcha of the ruchnius that we possess. I was walking with a high school kid, Erev Yom Kippur, a young boy, and he told me, I was very, very amazed to see things, you know, it's when you see it through somebody's perspective, the kid tells me, you know, I feel so bad for all the people around here. They don't even know it's the Yom HaDin. It's like a normal Friday for them. They don't know that there's a Yom HaDin. The sense that we have so much. Go to a quote-unquote simcha of a goy, of somebody who's not, who doesn't have a world of Torah mitzvahs. So what's a simcha? You know, you get drunk and you do crazy things until somebody gets hurt and then it's over. There's nothing else there. It takes a person from a darg of being doimet tzuras adam to being doimet tzuras bal chai. There's nothing there uplifting. It drains a person of life. It's a running away from something that's from being a person. And if you think about it, we've been through standing 12 days. We start at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's now almost 12 at night. And we sat, and we thought about ourselves, and we thought about a tachlis in life, and we thought about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Gadlus HaBoyrei, everything with it. And you know, and we didn't need food, we didn't need drink, we were completely absorbed in a world that's ruchnius. And then when we finished it, we're sitting and learning, and getting into the next mitzvah. Isn't it something, does anyone have what we have? If a child would feel that, even it's hard to sit and learn, but if you'd feel the happiness of somebody learning, he would want it. The one thing that would attract is when somebody sees, if you see somebody davening geshmak, so it attracts you. You see somebody saying psuka de zimra, And with Slavos, it turns you on because you can see that it becomes an extremely meaningful experience, and so on. The leg of Simcha is probably the most crucial leg. In three legs, each one of them is crucial. But it's the door doesn't have it. There's nobody even can speak about it. You have cheap entertainment, you have Jewish rock stars, and it's hard to describe it as Simcha Shel Mitzvah. And then you have Yira. That to some degree does exist. But the idea of being together, learning how to express good feelings of having, feelings of being proud, feelings of being of having rechush that no one else has, that's rare for us. And that's why Motzi Yom Kippur is an extraordinary moment for it. We feel the ruchnis that we've had, and now we can express it in song, express it in mood, express it in the different ways that it's expressed. Hopefully, This is a model that you can adopt in Yom Tovim. Beis Hashem, we're going to have a sukkah soon. If a person comes to a sukkah, if he did a little bit in Yonim of Yontiv, if he's misboning in it, it's a different feeling. There's a Simchas Yontiv. I was never a Zoch, I was never Talmud Chaim Berlin, American was, but I would go there every Yontiv on all four just to feel Yontiv. It was a setting that was, it was so enjoyable and so uplifting, and to feel that Kedusha can be so uplifting, and just the Ruach of Yontiv, the Torah of the Yontiv, the Zemer of the Yontiv, everything like that. It's a very, very, it's the critical piece. And when children see it, everyone here is always wondering how we're going to raise our children to be. I heard it from a cousin of mine. Her name is Rebbetzin Zaks. She was a daughter, a granddaughter of the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. She was 5 or 6 years old when the war broke out, and she and her sister were sent off to Goyim to raise them. And it was a few years that they were raised by Goyim. And when the war was over, it was hard for her to separate herself from her foster parents and come back. Like for many other children, some the foster parents didn't want to let go, and some the children themselves. She said, you have to understand something. I left home when I was 6, and now I was 10, and I had a different life. And they were devout Christians, her, and they took care of her, and they meant well. And now she struggled with it. And she told me what I remembered was, and this is talking about the granddaughter of Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Isaac Shah's granddaughter. And she said, when we were little girls, we would stand on the bench on the Azaz Nashim and watch the Hakafah Simchas Torah. And that sight was the sight that haunted me and brought me back. That's what a little child is able to pick up. You pick up a mood, an emotion, and if I think if our door of children would sense the enjoyment and the pleasure of Simcha Shal Mitzvah, Simcha Shal Yontif, Simcha of Shabbos, and so on, they would have a Mashiach towards it that would bring them back to it. So I think of the things that we try to convey in yeshiva, the one that is most fragile and so difficult to convey and doesn't, Yom Tovim, most Yom Tovim not in, and it's hard to get everyone together at the right time and the right setting, and you need people to cooperate. If everyone comes with the anticipation of being uplifted, then everyone, just like Yom Kippur by davening, everyone reinforces everybody else's, and it's good. If a person drags along, it drags everyone down. So this is not only besides the inyan of the Simchas Chag of Yom Kippur, I would wish it to be a model for what getting together and being besimcha can be. Yontiv, Shabbos has a dimension that it can be done, and so on. So that's, I guess, the core of the Suda and so on. Between Shmiya and Re'iya, Shmiya is bit by bit. In other words, if someone tells me a story, each prat is toughest in itself. Reuven went on this and this day to this and this place, and he did this and this. The oifi of Shmiya is prat by prat by prat. That's the oifi of Shmiya. The oifi of Re'iya is an entire picture in one shot. So a person looks at a picture. Sometimes it's difficult. Somebody tells me, look at this picture. And I look at it, and I'm baffled. I don't know. It's a picture. Don't you see this over here? Don't you see this over there? Don't you see the other thing over there? And the Shmiya is easier to follow with the mind because it flows with first, second, third, fourth. It's structured. The nature of Dibur and Shmia is that it's structured, and that's why Seichel is Teifasit. The flip side is you don't have things that are bigger than the sum of its parts have a very hard time coming through in Dibur. Prat 1, Prat 2, like a computer program, you know, where you each prat is point. There's no sense of that which is more than everything else. In Re'iya, because the pratim are there as a klal and as a shlemus, a person can get a sense of the entire thing in one shot. And he can get a sense of that which is more than that. So if I tell you, okay, this and this happened, and this person shot, and this place, and this person was shot, and this, fine, those are pratim. When I see a picture, I say, oh my gosh, a carnage, a massacre. That sense of that word is a lot bigger than the pratim. In Yonim of this world, in Yonim, Dibur, I got to say this, works fine. They tell me the details. Reuven did this, Shimon did this, and so on and so forth. When you're talking about Yonim that come from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, why don't we sit down with the Kohen Gadol and ask him, what was it like to be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? The answer is there are no words that serve to explain it, because it's not anything tangible that you can put prat and prat. It's the mara of the Kohen Gadol that carried in itself a me'ein of the mara of Kedusha inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim gave us a sense of it. We never get more than a sense of it. And a sense is never picked up through speaking. It's more just through observing, through absorbing. Revolver, when he writes in Ali Shur about the lack of Shimush Tamir Chachamim and the lack of people having a personal kesha into a godl and so on and so forth, I think a lot of times about it. To me, some of the people, Reb Nochum's Torah is available on many mesechtes, and Da'ilam is nene from it, and gets a lot from it, and it's fairly true to the Makar, and so on. And all the things that he said, all the Yisaitis and so on, are the things that he said, yes. But the look in his eyes, the chedvus of the shmeitzer of it, learning, escapes you. You don't, unless you saw the mara of Reb Nochum saying a shir, you're missing the whole chelik that's not the tangible part of the shir. You're missing what the Torah is. A person, I remember as a young child, I was zecher to see Baron Kotler once. He bought a love and a sreigim in a basement that was underneath our house, and my parents took me down for a bracha. I don't know, I must have been five or six, because we moved afterwards. And what I remember is there was something about his person that was like fire. The look in his eyes, the determination, the zrizus, it was like something like an eish eichla eish. There was something about it that left the impression of being somebody that was cool a fire. This was a young boy. This was the impression that it had, and so on. The mara of Reb Moshe Feinstein was the mara of Anova, Ni'imus Ruach, of the chain of Anova. Those are things that all the stories in the world don't give over, because stories are pratim. And when you're looking for the Ruach Lekim, when you're looking for the Ruach Kotshoi, you're looking for something that it's what dwells when those pratim are in place. When those stories are true, there's Anova on the person. There's Eish Kodesh in the person's neshama. So for us, it's a lot of details, and the sense of a Kohen Gadol coming out is only given over by Riya, and that's why when we try to describe Kohen Gadol, we don't tell over what the Kohen Gadol told, because there's nothing to say. Didn't lend itself to be saying. The Mara of the Kohen, we try to reconstruct it with our minds, using the words as a paintbrush, then you get a sense of it. And that's why it's important to develop that chush of being able to take what it says and paint a picture of it. And that's when you're able to get the sense of the deeper parts of it. It's in Akpera of Rosh Hashanah, and it has in itself, really in a sense, the teichin. Pasuk the two psukim Roch Hashem Nir Li Avasolim Avtich. Akadosh Baruch Hu appeared to us from a distance, and it expressed an eternal love. And Oidev Nechvin Ibn Neis Besulas Yisrael, I will rebuild you again, Besulas Yisrael. Oid Sadi Tupayich, you're going to adorn yourself once again with your drums. V'yatzos v'mechoil sachkim, and you're going to break out in a dance. The Malyusa of Yom Kippur, the Kippur is this man, the chshivas of the Baal Tshuva, vis-a-vis the Tzadik Gomer, is in Yom Kippur. Shalom Shalom Arochay V'Lakorev, Koidem Rochay V'Hodakorev. When a person is close to somebody else, and the closeness is a product of the environment, of the physical closeness, of the need for each other, and so on, that is real, but it's just a snapshot. All you see is the kirva now. We're in the same class, we're in the same society, we're whatever it is. The test for Avas Olam is when you become distance and you still yearn for something. When the relationship not only became distance in terms of physical distance, but it broke for a while. You broke off from the other person, and you still miss the other person. That's a sign of a depth of relationship that has in itself the Avas Olam. The word Olam is dashed both from Lashon Helam and Olam, and it's the same. In other words, the Ava Rabba, as Baal Tanya is Mechalik and Ava Rabba and Avas Olam, in his Lashonis, this is a theme that's expressed a lot of times in Tanya, in his Mamorim. Ava Rabba is a gushing, external Ava, but the quality of that Ava is that it's not permanent. The Avas Olam, if there's a permanent Ava, it's the part where the person's not aware of it. It's the part that's recessed in his conscience. And it comes out when he's distant and when he's been distanced emotionally and so on and so forth. That the person who had distanced himself yearns to come back again is a sign that much deeper in him lies the Nekud of Mashiach and so on. It's one of the things that with the old Dar, I still remember in Eretz Yisrael the tail end of the generation of the people who had broken away Biyat Chazaka from Yiddishkeit and became very left-wing. And there would be all sorts of strange things. There was a person who was the head of one of the left-wing kibbutz movements. He would come every Friday night to the Slonim Shul, stand outside by window, and sit through Kabbalah Shabbos, listen to Kabbalah Shabbos. Didn't dare walk in. He was embarrassed. They were embarrassed and whatever it was. But he couldn't tear himself away from it. The level at which Ava and Yiro was impressed on a lower level, on a deeper level, was by far greater than in our door. It was burnt into a child in a way that even when he rebelled against it and he broke away from it, he still would come back to it. Yom Kippur is the yontiv that, it's the yontiv of the people that were rochik and then became karev. And on the one hand, they missed out the years, the months, the time, the tekufa of being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You missed that. On the other hand, you say to yourself, you know, it was a lot deeper in me than I thought it was. And it means if even after being distanced, and every person from Shiur Delay, every person in the Yonim that he's not been there, in the Yonim that he's been distanced, it's a reawakening, not only to start again, but a person realizes how deep it's him and how much it's inside him. And that's the sense of the Pasuk. She's called Psulas Yisrael because a Psula is somebody that's waiting for somebody. She's Shema HaPesach for somebody. She's been waiting. I've distanced myself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's what I'm attached to, even after I have distance. That's why there's Avtocha HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rebuild again Knesset Yisrael, the Psulas Yisrael. You want to help me?
Meirachoyk, meirachoyk, Hashem nirali.
We've heard the introduction already. I wanted to add two more nekudas about it that we haven't spoken before. The nigun is El Gina Seges Herodity. I heard it as an old Breslov nigun. I later actually found it on a Faradika tape also. And it goes with a story, how it was misgalgal, and then the story is an important part to something, to a point I want to make. The person who revived the nigun, who brought it to the attention, was Chaim Shapiro, who lived in Baltimore, person who had sort of made the rounds during the war from one favor from place to another one. Most of the time, he was in Russia in different camps and so on. And he said he had a pair of tefillin with him. And one Shabbos, he was sent by the commander of his camp to deliver something, a package to an adjacent camp. And he was warned the password because they shot in Russia. They did the first thing, the Bruch HaMaboyim is shooting, and then the inquiry is at the autopsy, but the shooting is first. So he went there, and sure enough, you know, he almost got shot, and he said the password, they let him in, the mail. And he sees a Yid overgrown with hair, huge mop of hair, his head and his beard, sitting in a corner singing Zmiris. Askinu Sudasa. And he walks over and says, Shalom Aleichem, Yid. And this person makes believe he didn't hear him. Then finally he started talking more, and, you know, and finally the person's guard was down. And the person told him that he's a Breslov Chassid, he's in there for tens of years. I remember for how long he was sentenced. And he found out that Chaim Shapiro has a pair of tefillin. And he went berserk. And he said, the first time in who knows how many years a pair of tefillin, and it's Shabbos. Tell me which barrack you're in. So he said, it's not Shaykh because I'm the other camp. There's no way to go from camp to camp without being shot. He said, you're crazy. It's the first chance I have for tefillin and who knows how long. And good. He left and went back to his own camp. At the break of dawn the next morning, all of a sudden he sees a familiar figure leaning over his bed and tugging at his covers. Where's the tefillin? Where is it? And to a tremendous which runs his rakshas, he benched on the tefillin. And he explained to him that by the Russians, the reason why he looked so crazy was by the Russians, they considered madmen, certain types of madmen, like Rasputin and that type, as being sort of holy people, untouchables. There was a certain mystique. And the way in which he was able to get in the camp, like he was in after Michal Shabbos and so on, he was the camp mystique, / crazy, / whatever, and that was his place, and that's how he managed to get. And he came every day that Chaim Shapiro was there, he came to put on film. So he said, as a schar, I'll teach you a Breslov nigun. The nigun is, there's a Hebrew part and a Yiddish part, and at some point later, I would sing it stam because it's a very, very chaviv, it's very special to me. Rabbi Kramer found Chazal that it's nageya to Yom Kippurim. Motzim Kip actually. So definitely is Nibo Loyodama Nibo, it's the right nigun for it. The words are El Ginais Egois Yuradity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came down to the orchard of nuts. Lirois Be'ibe Hanochal, to see, to watch the things growing along the stream, because those things tend to grow quicker. Porcha Geffen have the grapes blossomed yet? Hey, Nates or Rimonim, have the Rimonim opened up yet? And then he stitches on a part of the next pasuk, Le'yadati nafshi samasni. Then there's a refrain in Yiddish, De'mamot mir geschickt, my mother sent me nisalach zu kleiben, to go and to collect the nuts. V'hoich is der boim, how tall is the tree, v'nidrig sein the kinder, kinderlach, how short are the kids. In other words, there's no way we could reach up there. Le'yadati nafshi, we don't know ourselves. The nigging is very hauntingly appropriate for the person. If you were to tell somebody, any human being, that you could be incarcerated for tens of years in the end of the world and still bear your Yiddishkeit, we would say, impossible task, not shaykh. A part of our Doris Nisoyen is the lack of believing yourself, the lack of understanding that you can do a lot more than you think you can. I always tell people, everyone wishes they could look into the future. If I were to, I was once speaking to my wife, if we were to look back 35 years ago, 36 years ago, when we were by the chuppah, if we were to see where the future would bring us and what it would bring, we'd say, you got to be kidding. This is not, it's not something we're capable of doing. It's not shaykh. Where? What? And a person has an awful lot to him, a lot more than he thinks he has. Two things sort of struck me over the last year or two. I was at Chabad, made a memorial shloshim for the shluchim that were killed in India. And they, you know, they had video footage of their shlichus time and so on, the PR work. And I was looking at it, and I was saying to myself, these were two kids, 22 years old, Israelis, they haven't been out of the country. At the age of 22, they picked themselves up and went off to India, to Bombay, and established, they had to find a few million dollars worth of funding. They had to establish from A to Z, from kashrus to baking to milking to cooking to everything. I mean, literally, Eretz Lezerua. And when they were killed, I think they were 26 maybe, or 27. And you watch. I mean, a bacha 22 today by us is still at the age when somebody has to do his laundry for him and put together like the simple elements of life. I mean, if you ask us what can we do at 22, the answer is basically nothing. I mean, and two young children were thrust into it. And they ran a major, major operation. I mean, they would shecht a few hundred chickens a week, and the wife would be directing a whole staff of Indian goyim cooking it and guests and people coming and keeping tabs. And you say to yourself, my gosh, where does it come from? And then you look at the 22-year-old who thinks he still needs some help with, you know, with crossing the street, basically, and you say to yourself, you don't know what you have in you. You don't begin to understand. Ravina Zecher Levracha became Rav over here when he's 26. Myself and Reingold are both twice that age. And we get shyless and things. I mean, just in the last less than a year, Ravina was involved some, but things landed. I shuddered. I said, there's no way, it's way too big for me to handle. I can't handle it. At the age of 26, he was handling a city that was not rabboni friendly in any sense of the word. It had its own agendas, it had its own issues, halachas from kashrus to erev and to mikvahs to tavelus to medical things, to people dying, to people living, to people fighting, to everything. And at the age of 26, he you know, yes, he was accomplished talmid chacham and very chashuv, a lot of milas, but we don't even fathom. On the one hand, Baruch Hashem, it's a door that has the luxury of being a child till the 30, 35. But sometimes you say to yourself, if the person would only know what he has in him, and you know, the kids look at the you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu sent us down, and we say, no way. I mean, the tree is so high, the kids are so little, and the reply is lo yadati nafshi. It's extremely powerful, because there never was in Doris an age of such old youngsters of such young, older people, I don't know which one to say it, where we still are expected to be handled and, you know, we're still children. And person doesn't begin to understand. And when a difficult tkufa comes, a person begins to see in himself what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is megala to a person, a difficult tkufa, is what he has in him. The lo yadati nafshi, you didn't begin to understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down and look, are things beginning to grow already? Is it blossoming? Is there some fruit? And the person says, you don't mean me. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you don't begin to understand what you have. I'll ask whoever remembers the name to help. Elkina segois yomad agefen heinetzu rimayim hapoko hagefen heinetzu rimayim loyodati nafshi loyodati nafshi demam mehat mir geschick hat mir geschick nisalach zu klaiben nisalach zu klaiben wie heuch ist der Bäum wie niedig sein die Kinderlach wie heuch ist der Bäum wie niedig sein die Kinderlach Lo yodati nafshi, lo yodati nafshi. Yoradeti, yoradeti, lihirois b'yimei at nabokal, lihirois b'yimei at nabokal, hapokha hagefen, heinetzorim b'aynim, hapokha hagefen, heinetzorim b'aynim, lo yodati nafshi, lo yodati nafshi, hot mir geschick, hot mir geschick, nisalach zu kleiben, nisalach zu kleiben, wie heuch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig sein die Kinderlach, wie heuch ist der Bäum, wie niedrig sein die Kinderlach, lo yodati nafshi, lo yodati nafshi.